God is telling me that this is my husband, this is my wife. Where, you know, but really it's just a lack of emotional intelligence.
Hola, everybody. This is Lucilania.
Hey, what's up? This is Steph coming at you live.
And this is Sex and Sensuality for the Churchy Podcast.
Sexuality, sensuality, especially for the, you know, for the churchy, is very like put out there. It's in your face, right? Every Sunday, you're either for it or against it. And if anything happens that's related to it behind the scenes, then it's usually scandalized, right? Like, oh my gosh, you know, I heard they did this and they did that. But nobody talks about, like, and I know you talk about it a lot of times, the healing nature of it, but you can only heal from something that aches you. You know, like, it's not like you're just healing for the sake of healing.
Well, I mean, I think it's because you've been in churchy settings, you know, religion, spirituality, Christianity, which is what I'm familiar with. But I imagine they're in other religious spaces, because Christianity is not the only religion, mm-hmm. that you still run the risk of approaching it as if it means that you are above all the things that happen to you, that you reach a space in your spirituality that is like, oh yeah, that doesn't really bother me, and that means you're spiritual, that means you have faith, mm-hmm. that means that you believe that these things are happening to you, but it doesn't affect you,
which is a complete lie, because nobody is with us 24/7 other than ourselves. So for the hour, 2 hours, 3 hours you're in church, who's actually showing up?
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, we would like to believe that we're showing up as, if not this broken, you know, vessel or this triumphant vessel, but even triumph still exists within the brokenness, right? Like, I can't be happy in God and, you know, saved if I'm not acknowledging that there's like this sinful nature that I'm tied to.
Yeah.
And
well, and that's the dichotomy, right? Because it's like, it usually, if you are acknowledging it, it is because of your sinful nature, not just because we're human and things happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're going through something and it must be because you sinned somewhere. It must be because you didn't believe enough. It must be because your faith isn't strong enough. If you're, you know, if you are emoting and showing that something is affecting you, you're emoting through shouting, through being at the altar and praying and crying for the Lord to save you, to help you, to deliver you. But it's not, it isn't modeled in a way of allowing and giving permission and really educating people on how to sit with their emotions and their feelings and learn from them.
Which is, I think, the hardest part, because I really think there's an expectation that, you know, when I show up and I'm, you know, if I'm not dressed the right way, if I'm not just even mentally coming into that space, I will tell you, one of the things that I actually do miss from my Catholic upbringing was the churches, because Catholics, you know, there's just huge old churches. And a lot of times they were quiet. Like, I could literally go in during the week and I could just sit. There was no expectation. Nobody came to me, you know. And I will have to say that was probably one of the most spiritual moments that really created a foundation for me, because I learned to sit. You know, I was actually the child that wasn't dragged to church. I went on my own accord because my family wasn't necessarily like big churchgoers back then when I was a kid. You know, over time, and even that's even still somewhat the same in a way, but I showed up because I felt like I was gaining something from being there, but not realizing that sometimes I was showing up because I felt like I had to be there. I had to, you know, showcase, serve, be available, you know, before even the ministry could even touch me in a way. I'm, you know, and forgetting emoting. There is no emoting. Especially on the guy side, like we're happy.
But again, even those men that I would see emoting in service, like, and we would be like, oh, that's so beautiful that he's worshiping and he's crying or he's worshiping, you know, he's dancing and this and the other. And it would always be something where whether it was said or not, there was always that feeling like, oh, this is great, because this is not something that is normal.
Yes.
This is not something that normally see. And so even like with us being in, you know, Alpha and Omega, like I remember that being such a huge thing where we would have those impromptu just like worship sessions. Mm-hmm. And as a churchy girl who grew up in church, like we often would have these struggles because it's like we're seeing a peer in worship crying and praying to the Lord, and it became a confusing thing where you can almost sit there and feel like, oh wait, am I attracted to him?
Yes, yes, yes.
Because
that intersection,
I'm seeing him in a way that I've never thought I would see him, and this automatically makes him attract. Am I actually attracted to him? I don't know. But seeing him worship and seeing him show up in the presence of God in this way makes him attractive. And
exactly what I was thinking. And I think part of the attraction was the boldness of it, right? Because, you know, there's not too many guys you're meeting who, even if they're in ministry, there's different mm-hmm. levels of how you exude God, right, within yourself. Yeah. And to have brothers who were like literally just, I mean, in a street, you know, with a lady that they'd never met before, with some sisters, and deciding to like have prayer for that person and just really like.
But that's the thing, like, why does it have to feel so bold for them? Like, why is that so transformational? It's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's like knowing a lot of them, most of them were not like that outside of those moments. So it's not like we're seeing a glimpse of who he is. Like, this was literally a break from his normal character. And maybe it's happening because he has so much that he's carrying. And he's in this moment where it's either so much that he has to let it go, or he does finally feel safe enough to do it. But it's not changing him enough. Either he's not allowing it to, or just whatever the case might be, that he's realizing when he steps out of that moment that maybe I need to work on being more emotionally present for myself and my life in general.
That conversation's not happening. As women, it was more
acceptable for us to do that. We didn't have the foresight.
Because it's funny that like I literally thought about the attractiveness of men worshiping, right? And like I think to myself, that attractiveness is one-sided. It's only on the side of women, right? The guys aren't saying to themselves, oh my gosh, look at her in worship. You know, like,
look, I'm just like, she's so pretty.
Yes, exactly. You know, I'm just drooling over here from all the from the adoration. But I think that there was an expectation, right? So at some point, it goes back to, again, at what point do we start living in our own expectations, or even better, it's okay that we grew up with other people's expectations because we had no other choice, right? That's just the way the world works. We live in families that have their own history, and we didn't make a choice about that history. We don't make a choice about who our parents will be, who our siblings will be, who are, you know, friends and everybody else. All right, cool. But there's a certain point, which I don't think happens for a lot of people, where you have to say to yourself, where do I start making decisions about what I truly believe and what no longer applies to me, right? And I think that conversation never happens. It just gets ignored. And you grow up being an adult, like, oh my gosh, like, look at, I mean, when you really think, I mean, I think about it now, like, it was such a fairy time land. I mean, like, you know, it was so magical almost in a sense. Like,
in a bubble.
Oh,
definitely in a bubble until either individually or collectively. Just like, but even with that, it's like, it's not even just enough to figure out, okay, you know, oh, is this what I, you know, this is what I believe, blah, blah. It's, you got to really sit there and be like, okay, this is what I currently believe, whether it's what it was given to me, what I've decided to believe, but do those beliefs actually help me? Or are they harmful to me or someone else? Because there are a lot of things that we do believe in out of self-preservation, mm-hmm. or we believe it's out of self-preservation. Let's not be esoteric about it. There are a lot of people who believe that, you know, we should only be heterosexual out mm-hmm. of some mm-hmm. weird, you know, self-preservation model. Because if everybody's going to be gay.
Everybody's going to have an alphabet letter.
It's like, it feels crazy to us, but there are people who legitimately feel and believe mm-hmm. that, like, to their core, they think that is real, that is a real concern.
A real threat.
Why Adam and Eve and this and the other, as opposed to seeing Adam and Eve, as someone said today, as two ends of a spectrum and not necessarily two binary individuals. And I'm like, because if we're thinking about Adam and Eve as masculine and feminine, and we all have masculine and feminine energy, and we all present those energies differently, then those things, as opposed to a gender binary, it's more of a gender spectrum.
Yeah. And it's
about biology and realizing that our sex is on the spectrum, because there is no male and female, just strictly.
No, there isn't.
That makes much more sense. And it actually aligns culturally, scientifically, biologically, versus this either or thing, which I think we don't just do with gender and sex, we do with a lot of things. We do it again, emotional, either anger or happiness.
Yeah, that's it. You're only allowed it. Maybe you get a cry moment like every couple of years behind closed doors for a brief period of time.
I remember a friend in college, like, we're, you know, sophomores maybe, and she's like, oh, I don't cry. This is a woman. And she's like, yeah, I haven't cried in like 10 years. And I'm like, not, you ain't seen like a puppy commercial or like nothing. Somebody didn't pass. You didn't watch a movie and it caught like nut. She was like, "No, I don't cry." I'm like, that can't be healthy.
I will have to tell you, I had an opportunity to sit in a group, and one of the questions was, "When was the last time you cried?" And I will tell you, I was listening to different people and so forth. And I'm usually one that I have no problem expressing myself. Like, you know, that's just never my issue. But I will have to say it was very triggering for me. Like, I couldn't talk about the times that I've cried, because they were so tied to, in some ways, really, I'm not going to say traumatic, but bad enough that I literally was like stuck in my stomach. Like I felt trapped and being unable to describe the feelings that caused me to cry or the context behind when I was crying, not because I was ashamed of it, but I didn't know how to even begin to start the conversation of the real reason I've cried is because my mental health has been a struggle for a long, long time. And unfortunately I've associated crying a lot of times with that. And, you know, and some of the times that I've shed a tear, I was in a very dark and very deep place. And it's not something that, like, I'm ashamed of. But in that moment, in that session, I was just like, I can't.
But it's not something we want to talk about. Nobody, who wants to go back to that dark place? Like, you almost feel like, okay.
You don't.
I'm actually better, but I'm not there. So why would I want to go back?
Well, but the thing that I enjoyed about that group was the fact that it was my choice, you know, because we had a point where we got to, like, you know, talk about it afterwards. And I made the point that I appreciated the fact that I didn't feel forced, right? It was, you know, whether I wanted to share or not was my choice. And that was empowering, because after that, it still stuck with me. And it became a moment where I had to kind of reflect back and think to myself, you know, the significance of crying, the significance of tears, the significance of emoting. And for guys, again, when I say guys, there's always a spectrum. Okay. We're all over the place, but with the guys that I grew up with, you cried if you got like hit in the balls and maybe even then you still try to hold back the tears. You know, you're like, oh,
some kind of involuntary reaction response.
I'm not going to let this all go through me right now. But I think going back to your earlier point, when I was around brothers that, you know, let's say worshiped or, you know, kind of opened themselves up spiritually, it opened up, I believe, other doors that people don't believe they're opening up, right? It's almost consequential, and it leaks, right? So for the person that was worshiping and, you know, the women are looking at him and they're like, oh my gosh, like, this is like a beautiful thing. Is it that it tells me now, knowing this now, that had to be something wrong with the experience that we've had to have, that moment alone created such a strong attraction that, I mean, I think some people would have got married if they had the chance. Like, they would have taken some husbands home.
Some of them did.
yeah, that is true.
Some of them didn't get divorced. Let's be real here. Some of them definitely was like, but again, I mean, to be honest, thinking about this and bringing up the idea of worship and how that's attractive for us, you know, us women in church, one, because it almost is like men in church, period, whether they're worshiping or not, feels like they're a unicorn. And then then if they're worshipers, like, oh my God, and they're actively serving God, that's like, they're sparkly. They're sparkly unicorns. And, you know, and so, and with purity culture, it encourages situations where it's like, oh, well, you don't date too long because you don't want to have sex. You're not supposed to have sex. So, he's the one. And how many people, like in those type of settings when that was happening, it's like, oh, you know, you feel like, oh, the God is telling me that this is my husband. This is my wife. Where, you know, but really it's just a lack of emotional intelligence. And we're feeling a lot of things that we don't know how to manage. We don't know how to handle. It's not something that is normalized. And we, you know, again, are overwhelmed with all these emotions, which is different than being vulnerable. Let's also be real here.
It's almost similar.
I think for me, and I think a lot of what I think, if men, you know, and this, of course, is a generalization, if men struggle with just being emotional and you know, outside of anger or happiness, and you know, being told that that's weak and crying and all that, you know, I would say that on a more general side for women, it's realizing that being emotional does not mean vulnerable. Yes. That it might be more acceptable for us to display a wider range of emotions, but that doesn't mean that we're vulnerable, and that doesn't mean that we are more emotionally intelligent than men.
And to be honest with you, that even in that ability to access those feelings, that they're even available to you or have been, right? We, you know, it's really easy to assume that women are more emotional, you know, men are not, you know, and it creates, again, that binary zero and ones, right? Versus when you do meet someone who says, listen, this is how I feel. This is how I am. I express my feelings, whether you consider it to be feminine, masculine, whatever. It's an emotion, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the part that I always try to strive is to say is, I don't want a person thinking to themselves, oh, I'm broken or I'm messed up because I never cried over the fact that something traumatic happened to me or something that should have made me cry didn't happen. What I hope is that the person can say to themselves, why is that? Like, was that really present in that moment? And was I really allowing myself to be that way? Or did I feel forced in order to rehearse some type of stage emotional reaction in order to make other people feel comfortable? Right? Because going back to it, men still take on that role of, you know, sometimes being the protector. And the protector isn't always about, you know, protecting you from the car that's going to drive you over or, you know, paying your bills. Protecting you can a lot of times be what allows women to be themselves, to have that space, right? Without the feeling that, well, if I have this space, what's the consequence of it is it, the consequence of it to my partner?
Well, I mean, I think, and that's the thing too, is like the danger of that, especially, I think about, again, the example of how us as sororers would be like so enamored watching, you know, our frat be, you know, worshiping and in these emotional, spiritually emotional settings and states, is that when men see that and they can learn to perform it, and learn that, oh, if I'm this way, they feel safe with me. I may not be actually safe, but I can model this safety for them and disarm them and then manipulate them to get what I want from them. Because we, again, didn't have, and a lot of us, you know, even as we grow older, 40, 50, 60 years old, don't have the emotional intelligence that we think we do. And so it doesn't take much for a man to show us something and us just be like, oh my God. And next thing you know, because a lack of emotional intelligence likely means that you also have a lack of boundaries. And now we locked in on some dude who really either can't or really doesn't want to really truly be there in the way that we want him to be there. He's just there enough to get what he wants. And then we are so enmeshed emotionally that this is when you start to hear about soul ties.
Want to listen to the rest of this conversation? Then make sure you hit the subscribe button and the notification bell to watch next week, Wednesday, 12 noon Eastern Standard Time.
Before we go, I do want to make sure that I invite my listeners, our listeners and watchers over on YouTube. I am hosting my first, but not my last, inaugural course called Heavenly Body, Healing from Purity Culture, 6 weeks starting on Wednesday, April 5th. You can go to my website. It's in the show notes, www.theradiantsessions.com/links. And you hit the top button and it will take you to the page to sign up for the course. Right now, I'm excited.
I'm excited for you.
Right. I'm excited. We're going to have a good time. We're going to definitely learn about how purity culture, you know, harms us, has harmed us. But what I'm even more excited about is helping you all with very practical things over the course of those 6 weeks on how to change your belief around purity culture and how to work that out with actual rituals and practices and exercises and affirmations and this, that, and the other. So you can create an ethic for yourself that doesn't harm you or other people in the way that purity culture has harmed us. So I hope to see you all there and join me and the others on that journey. And then you'll also have live coaching from me as well during those 6 weeks. So it is an incredible deal, as you all will be founding members of that course. So I can't promise that the next time I do it, it will be the price will be that low or we'll have all those things included in it. So definitely take advantage of that. And I will see you there. And as always, be as radiant as the sun.
Bye.